After leaving suburban Tennessee for a career in the Hollywood film industry when he was just 18, Brad Ware became, in a lot of ways, the picture of LA success. He had power, wealth, security. But 20 years into his West Coast life, Brad was struck with a feeling of absence, of being fully out of touch with himself and his family, whom he'd been estranged from all those years.
Even though we grew up in the same house, we never involved ourselves in the other one's life. There was never any bonding, per se. So to say that I was indifferent and estranged from my family, you know, I really was. They were strangers to me, and I was probably a stranger to them.
But his attempt to reconnect didn't exactly go as planned.
I started off by saying, "Dear Maury," and the first thing I wrote was, "I hate you."
I left her behind, my father and brother too, and landed in a new planetary system with the flicker of film and video for a son.
That's poet Chance Chambers. Today he hears from Brad about how sometimes getting everything you want in life leads you back to the things you never thought you'd need. And then Chance takes Brad's story of family estrangement and the cost of leaving loved ones behind and turns it into poetry. From Nashville Public Radio, PRX, and the Porch Writers Collective, I'm Joshua Moore. This is Versify.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to support this work, you can make a donation at WPLN.org.
I want you to think back to your senior year of high school. You're in your late teens, preoccupied with admissions letters, homecoming, or snagging an invite to the rowdiest after prom party. And whether you're headed off to Harvard in the fall or starting a full-time job as soon as the semester ends, you're standing at the precipice of the rest of your life. For many of us, it's a period of time bristling with excitement and potential. But as Brad Weir tells our poet Chance Chambers, for him, it was a time period brimming with the impulse to escape.
At the age of 18, growing up in Hendersonville, I just felt like I had itchy feet. I had to get out. So I'd always profess to either go to New York City or go to Los Angeles. And I really can't tell you where the idea to go to either of those two places came from, other than maybe, you know, watching television and hearing about them.
But regardless of where the impulse came from, Brad says he knew that for him, the only option was to follow it. And while typically one might feel anchored by commitment to friends or family, according to Brad, in the case of his next of kin, none of them were particularly well attached.
And we grew up as what you call latchkey kids. Parents were never around. Mom was an aspiring songwriter. She was always busy. Dad was traveling, so he was always gone. Home on the weekends, pretty much that's it. From what I've learned since then is that children that grow up in a parentless household usually either grow really close or they all grew up as individuals and never even knowing each other, and we were the latter of those.
A week after graduating high school in Hendersonville, Brad bought a ticket and flew out to live with his father in Salt Lake City. He was there just about a year when he got an opportunity that would take him even further west.
I got a call from a friend of my mother's who was in the film industry, and he had mentioned that he was going to be traveling out to Los Angeles in hopes of promoting and selling a script that he had written. So he asked me if I would go, you know, if I would go out there with him and just shadow him for about a week. And then afterwards, the plot was revealed that it was my mom's way of manipulating me back to Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
You know, go out, hang out with Wes Bishop. And when you're out there with him, after a week of hanging out with him, when both of you return, both of you can come back to Nashville.
But Brad's mom underestimated his thirst for independence.
I got out there, and I got to tell you, man, it was like a whole nother planetary system. I mean, having never seen any other cultures than what's reflected here in the South, I am just amazed, and I am curious, and I am asking questions. I was out there from the age of 18. I'm 52 now. I was out there for about 35, 36 years, you know, growing up out there.
After breaking his teeth in the film industry, Brad became a Hollywood success story, eventually working as a broker for films like Austin Powers and Carlito's Way. And in the early 90s, while working for a company called Moonstone, he landed a gig for a major cable television network.
And Moonstone had been working with a series of products called the Red Shoe Diaries, which was on Showtime.
David Duchovny.
David Duchovny, yep. And Zalman King was the producer. And at that time, it became Showtime's highest rated highest rated series in the history of Showtime.
I remember that.
Later, Brad parlayed his position as a broker on the show into a top spot in the sales division of a little known media company.
I was actually, at this particular point, I was the director of international sales for Playboy filmed product and located in Beverly Hills. And our office was the one that would take all the filmed product that Playboy produced and go out and distribute it across the world. So Playboy TV, if it's shown anywhere outside of America, well, that deal had to cross my desk at some point.
Professionally, Brad was at a peak. He'd come a long way from that starry-eyed 18-year-old with a plane ticket and no definitive plan. He'd managed to make a name for himself in the industry, and though his professional star appeared to be on the rise, Brad's personal life was another story.
And it was at that time when I had gone through my first divorce with my wife. I was married twice, married to my first mm-hmm. wife for about 14 years. Got this divorce, and I was devastated. Started drinking and using like crazy. I was doing it before, mm-hmm. but just then it was debilitating me at this point. And then trying to just get away from the feelings of this, because it was a very, even though I was not, I would have divorced me. I mean, when I look back at what type of husband I was, yeah. I mean, nobody should have been married to me. I never should have been in a marriage. I wasn't built for it at that time. Didn't know, you know, about honesty, didn't know about vulnerability, didn't know about sharing those things and learning how to communicate and appreciating communication from my partner, let alone myself. I didn't have the tools to actually put together or to create a successful marriage.
It went on like that for some time. The drinking, the drugs, a sort of Hollywood industry lifestyle. Brad had achieved a certain level of power, comfort, and security. But internally, he felt vacant, and he couldn't put a finger on what was missing. Then one day, coming home from work, he ran into his neighbor, a guy named Darren, just outside of their apartment building. And when Darren asked Brad, "How are you doing?" Brad surprised himself with the answer he gave.
And I can't tell you what it was. I can't tell you why I did this. But it was the first time in my life that I was ever honest, and I actually felt honest. And my response to him was simply, "I don't know." And he stopped and he looked at me. He goes, "You don't know?" And I went, "No." So he had asked me how I was doing, and I simply said, "I don't know." And he said, "Do you want to talk about it?" And I can't tell you what moved me to do so, because, you know, I was a very superficial guy. If it wasn't going to advance me or play into my strategy somehow, then I've got no response for you. But in this particular moment, all the planets were kind of like lined up, and I was in this place, and I just said, "Yeah, I'll talk about it. I don't even know what I'm going to talk about."
So Darren stops what he's doing and follows Brad up to his apartment to talk. They sit down opposite one another, Darren on the sofa, Brad on the love seat, and Darren asks him again, "What's going on, man?"
And I go, "Darren, I got to tell you, man, I really just don't know." I go, "It's like, you know," and I'm trying to think of something, some way to say it. And I said, "All I can do is describe it." And I said, "It's like this. It's like, you know how Saturn has the rings around it?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "I feel like I'm on that ring. And the ring is made up, you know, of meteorites. So I feel like, you know, one meteorite will be golf, another meteorite will be sex, another meteorite will be, I don't know, you know, snow skin or whatever. But I just go from meteorite to meteorite. But I never get on the planet." And he looks at me and he says, "Well, Brad, you know, what's the planet look like?"
Brad took his hands and put one on top of the other to demonstrate the shape of a sphere.
I go, "Darren, it's like there's this sphere, right? And you got all these meteorites around it. And I'm on the meteorites." And he says, "Well, what color's that sphere? What's it look like?" I go, "It's kind of orangey yellow." And he goes, "Okay." And he goes, "Well, Brad, why don't you look at it?" And I didn't think about it. And I said, "Well, okay."
Brad says he tried to look in the direction of the planet he was describing, but he couldn't.
I tried to turn my head, and I realized, "Brad, there's nothing here. It's your imagination that you're using to describe what's going on in your mind. Why can't you turn your head to this thing?"
I actually could not turn my neck to
look at this imaginary thing that I'm trying to describe.
Right, right.
And it's caught me by surprise. or it's caught me by amazement. And I'm going, Darren, I don't get this, man. Why can't I turn my neck? He goes, Brad, the reason why you can't turn and look at this thing is because it's you.
Oh.
I started gushing in tears. Now, keep in mind, I'm not the kind of guy, you know, at that point in time to where I was even in touch with my feelings enough to cry. Mm-hmm. So as I'm crying in front of Darren, Darren looks at me. He says, Brad, he says, look, man, he says, if you don't feel comfortable talking about this, it's okay. You know, we can do this in your time. I just live across the courtyard. And I said, yeah, Darren, you know, I got to tell you, man, this is really like I'm really in a weird space right now. So, yeah, I'd like to post, you know, do this another time.
Brad got up to show Darren out. But as they reached the door, he began having second thoughts.
And I go, Darren, would you mind? Can we give this another try? Yeah. So sure enough, we did.
Good.
And he comes back and we went through that whole modality again. And I did look at it eventually and I just started crying. And mm-hmm. what I saw or what came to my mind when I looked that way was an image of my brother.
Really?
Really.
When I
finally turned my head, yeah. I saw an image of my brother, and the thing is, you have to understand, my relationship with my brother was estranged.
Yeah.
My relationship with everyone in my family was estranged. When I left Nashville, I left the life of Nashville.
Right, right.
So birthdays, graduations, got nothing to do with it. Phone calls, never called back. Nothing. I'm just doing my thing out here. No animosity. None to speak of. It was just indifference.
It had been almost a decade since Brad last saw his younger brother, Maury. They never spent much time together growing up. Maury was 4 years younger, still in middle school when Brad left home. In these days, Brad knew almost nothing about what was happening in his brother's life, except for the most serious news. He had heard through the grapevine that his brother had contracted HIV, which later turned into AIDS.
This I knew. It wasn't life-threatening at the time of my sit down with Darren, because as far as I knew, he was taking the medication and he was on what's called the cocktail, right? But when I turned and I looked and I saw an image of my brother and tears started to come out, I didn't know where these were coming from or what they were about, but I was honoring it because I could appreciate, I've been honoring this honesty thing so far, and it's taken me into a realm that I've never even entered before in my life. And it was really moving for me. So Darren's just asking me, you know, or suggesting that I explore that if I want to.
Darren told Brad that he should try his hand at a free-form writing exercise.
And he says, oh, well, Brad, you just get a piece of paper. And whatever comes to mind, you just write it without context, without form. Just let your fingers, your hand flow, and without judging it. So I took his advice, and a couple of days later, I got the courage to actually sit down and do it. And when I did, I started off by saying, Dear Maury, and the first thing I wrote was, I hate you. Mm. You son of a... And I just went on and on and on and on and on, and page after page, and all of a sudden, I'm just flowing this stuff out. I hate you. And I'm just... And then I end up with the pencil in my fist, and I'm gripping it, and I'm just going back and forth. And I'm just rubbing holes through the paper with this pencil lead. And then finally, it starts turning into love. And I start talking about how much I love him and how much I miss him. Ooh. So what I decided to do at the end of that, and it wasn't even a decision, it was just something I had to do. And there again, I'm honoring these feelings for the first time. I've never had feelings like this before. If they weren't manipulative feelings or thoughts, they didn't enter my mind. I had no use for them. So this was the first time that I was going into like this whole expression thing.
Brad was shaken. He felt like it was time for him to go home and see his brother and the rest of his family. So that very day, he bought a round-trip plane ticket back to Nashville with the intent of finding Maury, knocking on his door, giving him a hug,
and just expressing my love to him and letting it go at that and just seeing what happens. So I bought the ticket, and it didn't make any sense for me to buy the ticket. I had work I had to do, but I just put everything. I said, screw it. I got to do this, man. Just like I had to ask Darren to sit back down. You know, I can't deny this stuff.
That night, while Brad was packing his bags for Nashville, the phone rang. It was his mom on the line.
She says, Brad, I got something I got to tell you. I go, what? She goes, your brother is dying. And I just went, whoa. Whew. And I hung up the phone, and I'm laughing, and I'm crying at the same exact time. And I'm just getting blown away by this experience. And I fly into Nashville, and I go up into to the hospital room. And I just I went over to him, and my mother and father were in the room. It was the first time that I ever saw my mother and father as people. Just two people losing their child. So I leaned into him. I gave him a kiss. And I said, hey, sweetheart, I said, you can go if you want to go. You don't have to stick around for these guys. They'll be okay without you. I love you. It was a beautiful time, man, of just being human.
It's certainly not lost on Brad that if he hadn't said, I don't know, when his neighbor Darren asked him how he was doing, he might have missed that final moment with his brother. And how making the sudden decision to be vulnerable offered him the chance to find something he didn't know was missing. In just a moment, we'll hear from Chance about his takeaways from that revealing conversation and how he intends to recreate Brad's story of finding home again in a poem. This is Versify.
Hey, I'm Jacob Lewis. If you like Versify, you will love Neighbors. I'm on a quest to make sense of the human experience through the lives of the people in my community. There's something magical about getting an intimate pass into someone's world and hearing about moments that transformed them.
I was shot within seconds of exiting my car.
See, what people don't realize is that we all have things that we carry that can bring us together.
Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and get to know your neighbors.
The story that Brad shared with Chance covered quite a few years of his life, with lots of meaningful details, which can be tricky for a poet to work with. And sometimes it can be useful to locate a unifying theme or image that holds the piece together. So we asked Chance if he found any such anchor in his conversation with Brad.
Well, actually, he inspired me to use some space and planetary sort of references because he brought up an image, an analogy to Saturn, and he talked about when he moved out to L.A., it was a whole new planetary system. So that just kind of worked out on its own. And that made me think of Saturn Returns, the idea in astrology of a particularly rough time at a certain age. And so I kind of went with that idea. So the whole sort of becoming distant from what's important in family sometimes and needing to be directed back to that, yeah, I could definitely relate.
Brad and Chance got back together a few days after their first exchange so that Brad could hear the poem that developed from their conversation.
So you had quite a bit of planetary imagery in your story, and I kind of ran with that. Mm-hmm. And so the poem is called Saturn Returns by I-40 West.
Wow. So I dig the title, man.
Well, here we go.
All right.
1 week after graduation, money enough to fill a pocket, I broke from Alabama's orbit and shook loose the gravity of Hendersonville. Wrote a taste for something more as far as Utah, which is no New York, but almost L.A., at least close enough to foil a mother's search and rescue mission. I left her behind, my father and brother too, and landed in a new planetary system with the flicker of film and video for a sun, where moonstones crumbled cocaine and tributaries flowed with alcohol and adrenaline, an alien terrain where naivete led to first contact, where I stumbled over tracks left by red shoes and regret. I bounced weightless until the day Saturn returned, the day my neighbor asked, how are you? The day I broke our ritual with the only words I had in that moment. I don't know, I said, and Saturn hit me with its rings, one rock at a time. Sex, drugs, golf, alcohol, money, all the pieces of my broken astronaut life. Describe it, my neighbor said. It was an orange sphere. Look at it, my neighbor said. When I couldn't, Saturn hit me with terrestrial truth.
Ooh.
Look at it. When I did, it was my brother, diagnosed and distant. Write it, my neighbor said. I transcribed hate for my brother until the page ripped on blades of light and the ink ran in my tears, drying in the shape of the word love. When Saturn hit me a third time, I bought a plane ticket back to Nashville, across an expanse of space and time too long to measure in frames. He's dying, my mother said on the phone that night. I landed in an old planetary system, locked in a vault of fading reels marked with forgotten plans and good intentions now illuminated by the conviction of a disease with its own plan. With a kiss, I released my brother, and in the hue of grief, I saw my mother, for the first time, human. My father, for the first time, human. My brother, for the first and last time, human. With a kiss and no goodbye, Saturn rolled back onto I-40 and left me, more than ever, human.
You heard me.
You spoke to me.
Wow, man. You captured it. I had no idea that someone's words, your words, could paint a picture as accurate in such a way that it actually takes something that's really esoteric, just my memory, my thought, my interpretation of what happened. And you actually bring it together to make a beautiful, beautiful picture in my mind. Something that I can relay and something that I can hold on to. Coming back to Nashville, what I heard was, I'm coming out of space. And I'm about to be grounded. For the first time, you know, in all the years of my life, it was like my brother's death and seeing my parents as real people was the first time that I felt something under my feet. You know, like there was a purpose.
Versify is a production of Nashville Public Radio and The Borge, which trains our poets and hosts our storytelling events. Editing for this episode came from The Borge's Susanna Feltz, with additional editing by Anita Bug. The episode was written and produced by me, Joshua Moore. Carl Peterson masters the show. The music is by Chad Crouch, Jahazar, Paddington Bear, and Yair Yona, all courtesy of the Free Music Archive. Versify is distributed by PRX. And tune in again to hear the beauty of how we can turn your life into poetry, one verse at a time.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.